Conscious Curiosity SD, where successful San Diego leaders share their stories of leading beyond profit and are using the influence of business to positively change the companies and communities we all work and live in. I'm your host, Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership, a proven and powerful process for unlocking the full potential of the people and teams across your organization, giving you the competitive advantage in the marketplace. We want to thank our collaborative community of business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Business for Good, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're all focused on impacting our community of San Diego through the work they do as business leaders. Welcome to the show. One of the best gifts my wife has brought into my world is an appreciation for flowers, from the wonderful arrangements in the house to noticing the flowers that make San Diego, San Diego. Today in the studio, we have a business leader who has taken her deep love of the natural world and is making San Diego a place of beauty, one flower at a time. Natalie Gill, welcome to Conscious Curiosity SD.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Natalie is the founder and co-owner of Native Poppy. With several locations in San Diego, Natalie's stores continually transform as pieces of art as they partner with local artists to create seasonal art. Natalie launched Native Poppy in 2014 as an opportunity to pursue her life's purpose, creating joy in the world by making art with her friends. Today that we're going to explore that journey, going from creative to operator. Natalie, you ready to rock and roll?
Let's go.
So here we are, 10 years in. How's it going?
I'm tired.
You're tired.
I look older than I was.
10 years older, exactly?
Yeah, I look 20 years older, but I'm only 10 years older.
So here's my first question for you. 10 years in, what's the big lesson learned? If you were talking to Natalie of 10 years ago, man, here's the one thing I want you to know.
I mean, I guess that it's just like feeling that I had when I started that was so full of like can-do spirit. When I started, there was like a light bulb moment where I realized that nothing in life keeps you back from getting what you want. It's just yourself. And once you start doing what you want to do, you can make your dream life happen. And so I had this like momentum and excitement and like energy to start this business. And it was 24/7 full on. And it was just, it felt magical. It really did, even though I was probably making the most mistakes I've ever made and was actually losing money year over year.
It's just a detail.
Yes, whatever. And then 10 years in, I've really refined it, grown my team. We have a lot of meetings. I do a lot of paperwork and accounting, and I really think about things in a different way now. And I've kind of like, in some ways, I wouldn't say like lost the magic because it's still very much there. But I'm in the routine of like this day-to-day operator where I was very creative. And like, I feel like I was manifesting magic in the beginning. And now, I mean, manifesting magic is literally our core value of our company. So it's doing it, but it's doing it in like a routine business type of way. And so I don't know, I guess what's my big takeaway? My big takeaway is that to be successful, I had to turn this passion into a business. I don't know, I guess this is like a depressing answer. My big takeaway is that.
Note the file.
My big takeaway is that you can do anything you want to in life. Just start doing it. And I guess it's trying not to lose that energy as you get stuck in the minutiae of operating your business. Because I realize in those moments that I get back to having fun and doing what I love doing and like creating these beautiful flower arrangements and beautiful events. And like, I get back to being the artist within my business. We have bigger change there, bigger growth opportunities.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Kind of cracks me up if you say this, because I remember I called you and you were saying you were doing something you haven't done in a really long time. You were actually making a flower arrangement.
Yeah.
You were being creative because some people hadn't shown up that day. So
yeah.
Back to the program.
Yeah.
So what was your history? What led to this? What made you believe you actually could do this?
I mean, I went to UCSD and I studied psychology and cognitive science. I was like working in a lab at Scripps, helping a grad student with her neuroscience project. I did that for like 2 semesters and I really thought I was going to go into neuroscience. I really liked the creativity of designing those experiments, but I think I also just like had an ego thing that I wanted to be smart. I wanted to contribute to society. I wanted to do something really challenging and hard. But then when I like really thought about the lifestyle of that for me personally, I did not love being underground in red light, sterile environments and doing prescribed things, a lot of spreadsheet data entry, a lot of routine. And I just really thought about like, what do I want my life to look like? And I just have such a sense of, I like things that are always changing and more creative in like a practical sense, like the arts. And so I was just like, okay, I'm going to write a list of what I want my life to look like. I want to work with my hands. I want to work with my friends. I want to do something that's always changing. I want to work in natural lighting, not fluorescent lighting. I want to feel connected to nature. And, you know, this list. And I was like, okay, what is this? And so I took some time off from like pursuing a career. I became a nanny, which was awesome. I really started thinking about like, what fits this criteria? And I just started thinking like every time I met somebody or I heard a job or, you know, I came across a product or concept, I was like, does this fit my criteria? And it kind of then came down to flower arranging or cake decorating. And I think that truly flower arranging had a lower startup cost because cake decorating, I had to go to pastry school. Maybe I didn't have to, but, and it kind of clicked because in high school, I was freelancing with a florist in the Bay Area and I would just help him randomly. But I remember that energy of like being at his house, like working on a wedding till 2 a.m. and like not feeling tired and feeling like I am in the flow state. And I was like, okay, I just had this light bulb moment where I was like, okay, actually flowers is it. I want to do that. And then I came up with the name Native Poppy and the rest is history.
Here like, we are really, today, yeah, 10 years crazy. Later, right?
Yeah.
What a great story. So you created this with a little grander purpose, right? Kind of back to, I met you through conscious capitalism. That's where we first met.
Yeah.
And so part of conscious capitalism, there's something bigger you're trying to accomplish. And I know I'll let you kind of share what that is, but maybe talk about maybe how that evolved and maybe what that looks like today. Has that maintained, been able to maintain that through the 10 years or maybe speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, so many ideas are coming to my mind right now because I don't think there's like one main thing that we're trying to do that's bigger. I'm kind of like in everything we're trying to do it the best we can and the best it's ever been done, like crazy people. And so like from
that's a higher purpose right there, right? Yeah. We're trying to always put the bar a little higher than what we think it should be. Yeah.
Always. And I think that, okay, it just starts with like flower arranging. Like I just want to be the best designer. I want my team to be the best designers. I want to send out the best flower arrangements you've ever seen. Then it's like the store experience. I don't want the store experience to be like a transaction. I want it to be an experience. I want the music to be perfect. I want the lighting to be perfect. I want the displays to be inspiring, like fills you with a spark of creativity and wonderment that you're so happy you're like in our space. And then we have a flower bar where you can like build your own bouquets. Like when else in life do you really get to like go in and touch flowers and create something? Like instead of a grocery store, it's in plastic wrap. This is like a plastic-free company. And then also like in how we treat our employees and elevating their experience at work. And then in just like our business practices and how we choose to do things that might not make bottom line sense to be eco-friendly, but we're taking those steps because it just feels like the right thing to do. Like composting all of our green waste in San Diego is not free. It's not a service that the county offers. So we have to pay extra to dispose of our green waste, which in a business, the flower business, that's actually like one thing I really hope to get across during this podcast is like how being in the flower industry is different than I think people's perception of it. And just like all the nuances of it. I think a lot of people think, wow, being in flowers is so fun. You're making art. And it's like, it is, but it's such high stakes. Normally, every flower arrangement is surrounded with so much emotion from the sender or the recipient because it's always celebrating something really emotional or something really sad. There's a lot of expectations around a single flower arrangement. And then we're also dealing with something that the product is so fragile that it's going to die in a week if you treat it perfectly. If you don't treat it perfectly, we have huge loss right away. Like, let's say we get in a bunch of snapdragons, there's 10 snapdragons, and as you're opening the plastic off of them and cleaning the stems, you accidentally pull one too hard. That's 10% of your profit right there. Like, we're constantly dealing with just 10% falling away. You have a bucket of roses, and you accidentally, like, move the bucket, and one of the stems pops out of the water, and it dies because you didn't realize the stem wasn't in water. Or, like, you bump into a bucket because it's so crowded, and you break two, whatever. And, like, the restaurant industry doesn't have to deal with this because in some ways. I'm sure they deal with moldy product, but like if a cauliflower drops and it bruises, so what? You cut off that part of the cauliflower, you can still use it, you chop it, dice it, puree it, whatever. With flowers, if you drop a drop of water on a petal and it browns it, you can't use that anymore. We're dealing with perfection with a product that is so fragile. And so high client expectations and really, really delicate product, which is insane.
Like you're doing surgery every day.
It is, right? It is crazy.
With life and death circumstances on the other side. Wow.
It really is.
I guess I really thought about that before.
It's insane. So I digress. I got into like.
We're talking about the purpose and kind of the standards, and what you're trying to do is maintain a really high bar, and what that looks like in your industry was
totally
heck of a challenge.
And I think I'm just saying, I really.
You're saying
really
don't get into this business, is what you're saying.
No, my business partner and I are always like, we could have chosen anything else. When we deal with other businesses that we hire as contractors or whatever, we're like, God, we did not get into this business for the money, did we? Like, it just is so hard. I think other things are like, we look at the flower industry in general, and you're dealing with a lot of small mom and pop shops. There is no Starbucks of flowers right now. There is no national chain, except maybe like 1-800-Flowers. But again, they're using their platform to have mom and pop.
They're a distributor.
Right.
Really is, yeah.
So there's nobody who's like been able to expand this like national brand. It's also very interesting that there aren't a lot of like flower shows on TV. There's a million cooking shows. There's a million home design shows. There's a million like fashion shows. And I just feel like flowers right now it's not like a part of our culture. People don't really find it interesting, even though I bet you if there was a TV show about flowers, people would be addicted because the drama
there you go,
that goes
Natalie,
into.
Maybe that's just the big move, right?
So I guess,
the reality TV show. All right.
Yeah. I mean,
you heard it here first.
I know this is a really long answer, but I think one of the ultimate things is trying to change our culture's understanding about what it really takes to be a florist and why it actually is important, why flowers actually elevate spaces, they elevate events, why we use them to send messages of love or regret or grief. You know, it's so meaningful, it's beautiful, and it's
difficult.
It's difficult as a business owner. But
well, as I opened up the thing, I mean, I guess, of course, I've seen flowers my whole life, and you know, you appreciate them at some level, but my wife really loves flowers. And back to you, like, hey, important moments, you better bring some flowers to the house, you know. But it is, you know, I love to walk in the house and there's a nice big arrangement there. I mean, it just really does change the mood of the room, right?
It really does.
But I love the point that you're making that generally when people are buying flowers, it's usually associated with something, right? And there's got to be some great satisfaction in that as well, just to see how you're affecting people. And I'm sure you do weddings and things like that, so you get to participate and see that.
Yeah, weddings, funerals, big birthday parties, graduations, groundbreaking ceremonies for hospitals. Like, it's all over the place. It's really, really cool how many different things you get to be a part of.
So I know you're involved with the San Diego Museum, where they do the big kind of art show where they take art and they have all the artists or the florists, I guess, come in and say, all right, take this piece of art and turn this into an arrangement. You were involved in that in some different ways, I understand. My wife was telling me this morning.
Oh, cool. Yes. So the San Diego Museum of Art, their biggest fundraiser of the year is called Bloom Bash and Art Alive. And then Art Alive is where they have a bunch of florists come in and recreate pieces of art in flowers. And then as part of that fundraiser, they also have Bloom Bash, which is a big party on Friday night. And there's food and dancing and drinks and fun activities. And then as part of the Art Alive, they hire a rotunda designer and they do a large scale installation in the middle of the museum. And
which is amazing. I've seen that several times. Yes.
Yeah, so cool. So last year they hired me to do
it. Oh, that was yours. Okay.
Yeah. I was the pink one with all of the orchids and tumbleweeds and carnation garlands. And so I did that last year and it was 40 feet tall. And I spent $20,000 on flowers and we spent a lot more on labor. And it took me and my team of 10 people 3.5 days. Well, of just set up to build it. And then we were also prepping before. And I had an 8-week-old baby. So it was crazy.
Oh, yeah, the baby.
The baby. But it was really beautiful. It was such a joy. That was one of those moments that's like, okay, I am running a business right now. We have 25 employees. We have delivery. Like, just the logistics of having these three locations is intense. But then there's these moments where you get to create actual art in an art museum. And that is so fun.
Makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah, even though it was kind of also trauma.
I imagine had its challenges, right? Yeah. A couple flowers didn't show up quite the way they're supposed to, I guess. A few things like that. So team. So obviously you're trying to hold a really high bar here and make some things happen in your organization. So how do you hire? How do you keep your team thinking the same way you're thinking?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, we have all different job roles to fill. We have florists, we have delivery drivers, we have our studio assistants. Those are people who like help with all of our gift intake and our supply ordering and cleaning. Like, you don't think about how much cleaning florists have to do. All of the vases, the candles, so much cleaning. And then we have our admin assistant. We actually also have a garden out in El Cajon that is on an old tennis court. And we have, I think, 43 raised beds out there. We grow, I think, over 100 varieties of flowers over the course of the year. Also, you can fact check me on this. It's on our website. I don't really remember the specifics, but we have a full-time gardener who works out there. We're growing like pesticide-free flowers. I have a director of operations and a director of e-commerce, and we have a marketing department. So it's, yeah, it's just a real company now. It's just funny because only a few years ago, I was working in my garage doing everything with my business partner, and we just kind of like, it's kind of awe-inspiring sometimes when I name out everybody who works with us. It's wild. Okay, how do we hire them? I mean, really, we come back to the core values. Like, do you want to make the world a better place? Do you find joy in giving other people joy? Do you love flowers? Do you want to make magical moments? Like,
how do you validate that? Because you asked me, oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, just, I mean, how do you know?
I guess it's just vibes. It's just vibes. You know, you just know when somebody's lying to you, and if somebody can give you a genuine example. And then I think it's also just like setting really good expectations for our side of what that looks like in our business and examples of when we've seen this done. So people understand what we're asking to be done. And just
examples of when that bar is like, here's how everyone else would do it, but here's how we do it kind of thing, right? That kind of back to that.
Yeah. This is like the longest tenure I've had a lot of employees. We've had quite a few employees on our team now, over 4 years, celebrating their 4-year anniversaries. My business partner's been with me for 8 years. My husband joined the business reluctantly.
We've got the whole family in here now. Huh? How about the baby?
I mean, not yet, but she has modeled a few times.
So. There you go. Of course.
But yeah, I think that it's really nice to have people who have been with me a while now, because in the beginning, it was just, I think the pay that I could afford or like my lack of systems was probably really hard for people to stick with me. I think that they lost faith in it or like just
got frustrating.
And I'm sure it was frustrating. There were some dark times of chaos. And, you know, just when you're starting a small business like this and you're working in the business, there is not a lot of time to set up your systems. It took a long time to get there. And so anyway, I just think it really is pretty amazing when I think about people are celebrating 4-year anniversaries with us.
So how's the partnership worked out? So you brought your partner in. I think she was already working in the business or something, if I understand correctly. Yes. So how do you guys kind of divide things up?
Yes. Yeah. Meg was my first employee on the first day I opened the retail shop.
So she was crazy enough to hang out long enough. Okay. I'll make you a partner now.
100%. She was just amazing. Like, it was meant to be. It was like one of those moments that it was meant to be. She saw.
Did you know her from the past?
No.
Or?
No. Oh, she cold called me. She saw my coming soon sign on a building. And she just said, ooh, a flower shop, that sounds like a cool job. She was between jobs and she said, can I come interview for you? I don't know anything about flowers, but I'm a joy to work with. And I said, sure, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know if I need help even, like maybe just come help me babysit the shop when I can't be here, which is hilarious because we were open 7 days a week, 12 hours a day in the beginning. And I only hired 2 part-time people and I worked 7 days a week. Obviously. Anyway, she was just incredible. She worked next to me the very first day the shop opened and we made flowers not knowing anything. We didn't have a cash box. I didn't have a website. I had no way for people to pre-order flowers. We had no idea what we were doing, but we had so much fun. And then she just kind of became the yin to my yang. You know, we would like text each other the same thing at the same time. We were always on the same page about where the company was going, the mission. She was able to like really helped me hone in my ideas. She would make sure that my big ideas became actual actionable plans.
So it's kind of an executor.
Yeah, she's incredible. And she also holds the line on things. She's amazing. So
she helps your creator piece be more of an operator.
Yeah, but she's also incredibly creative herself. She does nice. All of our marketing. She's like also our model. She's just our customer service guru where I get really grumpy all the time. She's always calm and collected, you know? Yeah, it was really, really easy to bring her in as a partner.
So you've had some other challenges as well, like the flood.
Oh, God.
Right? So global warming is showing up for you, right?
Here yeah.
Is, so maybe talk about that a little bit. What's that experience look like and how'd you guys overcome?
Yeah. So 2 years ago at our South Park location on Monday morning, we're closed on Mondays. My husband was there with a handyman and they were fixing things on the store. And you can see on a security video that my husband literally goes to the front door of the store and he like opens and closes it, fixes it with WD-40, like sands off the bottom, make sure that the door like is swinging perfectly. You can see he's so satisfied that he got the door to like perfectly close without sound. He walks away and 3 seconds later, a car crashes into the store at 60 miles an hour. Like we are so lucky we were closed. He stepped out of the way 3 seconds before and no one was in the store. No one was hurt because people would have died. This car came crashing into the store. We were closed for 6 months because Ouch. Yes, it devastated the store. It was wild and nobody was injured. Nobody was hurt. Even the driver of the car got out and I don't know actually what happened to them, but I think they're okay. You can see in the video that they got out.
They survived. Yeah.
They survived. So that was wild. Nobody was hurt. So that's, you know, everything else is gravy after that. But
what a blow, right?
What a blow. Like seriously, just the lost revenue, even though yes, insurance kicked in and they could pay for the loss of revenue. The store kind of in some ways still hasn't recovered. And I think that 6 months, people think that you go out of business, even though you have signs up that say,
we're here,
you can order online. There was a car crash. It's just, you know, one of our other company like things is that we just say people don't read, like on our website, you know, people just don't read. It's fine. They just don't read. So our traffic is slower at that area now, but we were able to completely pivot. My team showed up that day. We were able to get stuff out of the store. We were able to relocate, work out of our warehouse. But yeah, we were closed for 6 months there. So that was challenging. And then a year later in January, during all the heavy rains in San Diego, our warehouse, which is down in Mission Valley, flooded terribly. That morning, we knew it was going to be flooding. And we knew that the building we were in flooded sometimes during the winter. But like I said to our gift buyer, I was like, I'm going to go in and just like pick up. I think our last shipment is cardboard and I think it's on the floor. I'm just going to go pick it up and put it on the table. And I was like, is there anything else you want me to pick up? We've kind of thought about like,
right? Yeah,
we kind of thought like, okay, we had flood boards up on the outside of the roll up garage door and we had some sandbags outside the front door thinking like worst case.
Might it was take just a little
be,
wave.
Yeah,
here.
It was going to be like a couple inches maybe. When I showed up to go pick up that one box off the ground, the warehouse was flooded with 3.5 feet of water. I opened the door and stuff that I knew was stored 2,000 feet away started floating by me out of the store. And it was devastating. We had 3 delivery vans parked inside because also, you know, where we are is an interesting place. We had to park our vans inside our warehouse at night because we've had vandalism to them. So 3 of the cars were, well, 2 of the cars were totaled. One, our landlord was so awesome and was able to get it out when they realized the flooding was going to be so bad, but they didn't have the time to move all 3 of our vans.
So it happened kind of like?
It happened like a flash flood. Like the business next to us is a gym and they were there working out and they said that they were working out. And then the water started coming in and they were like, oh man, this is crazy. I think there were little kids there. And they said, okay, kids, like jump up on these apple boxes. And then they realized that it was coming in way faster and way higher than they thought. And so the moms took their kids out. They were able to get out to high ground. But it's like hard to say. I'm like getting emotional because the people at the gym were trapped in there. Like,
oh my goodness.
Yeah, they were trapped in there for 45 minutes in waist high water. A guy down a couple of doors down, he was a graphic designer. He was stuck in waist high water in his building. He couldn't open the doors for 45 minutes. It was really bad. It was really bad. And then unfortunately, yeah, insurance doesn't kick in for floods. We had no insurance help. There was no city or government help for us. If you had over 12 employees, you didn't qualify for any grants. Granted, the grant, I think, was $1,500, which
unfortunately
didn't help a lot. And then FEMA was only for private residences, so it didn't help with businesses.
So you found yourself in this gap.
Yeah, we had nothing. So we did a bunch of our own fundraising. Valentine's Day was a couple of weeks away, which was extra difficult because we had a lot of inventory in our warehouse prepared for Valentine's Day that was lost. But what we could do was get more flowers. And so our community showed up and they pre-ordered flowers. We had a record-breaking Valentine's Day. It was incredible. And then we were able
to... That makes me kind of emotional. I love that when the community kicks
in. It was incredible. It was truly incredible. Nice. It was... And then people just donated to us. We put a donation button up on the website. We did a fundraiser later on that businesses that we've worked with donated services and goods, and people, we did a silent auction, and we were able to recover financially through community help. And I think that kind of comes back to like what you said, like, how are you doing things differently? We met during in Conscious Capitalism, and sure, we are a for-profit business, but the way in which we treat people and the way in which we treat our products and the way in which we like show up, I think these are the moments that we see it when it's returned to us, when we had this disaster in our communities, comes back, buys from us, supports us, donates to us. They don't want us to go out of business. And like the love and support you feel, even though it's a tragedy, like we are doing something right. I don't think we would have seen that type of like.
If you were Amazon, yeah, you might not have gotten that same response,
not.
Right?
Yeah.
That's kind of an interesting story because the origins of conscious capitalism is John Mackey, who started Whole Foods, had a very similar story. He owned a local grocery store and they got flooded out. He thought, that's it, we're out. But then the community came around him, which opened his eyes to, wow, there's a whole lot of people that care about what we're doing here. And thus, that's what led to conscious capitalism. So a very similar story.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
But that's the example of that when you're doing good things and right things,
yeah,
right? People notice and it comes back.
Yeah.
Versus, yeah, man, I just got to squeeze every dollar out of this thing.
Yeah.
That's, you know,
definitely.
It's all about the profit.
Yeah.
So talk about being a business leader, being a lady and having a child. What's that look like? How are you managing that? Maybe some tips for some moms out there.
I have no tips. I'll take tips. If you want to call in right now, we're accepting tips. No, I have no tips. God bless everyone, every mom out there who's doing this, because I mean, sure, I knew it was going to be hard, which is why I was hesitant to have a child. I waited until my late 30s. Like I was hesitant because I love my business and I love working and I love freedom and I love being an introvert. And that does not work really well with having a child. So it's been challenging, but the risk was worth taking because, man, are they cute. And
better than flowers, maybe.
Better than flowers. It's so funny and it really is life affirming. But no, the juggling act of it is not. It's not easy. And I don't even think it's like really a reality that you can do both well, you know, like
something's got to give a little bit somewhere.
Oh, right? Yeah. And for me, my social life has gone away. I used to be very like going to networking events, hanging out with friends, talking to friends on the phone. That's the thing that's dropped because I have to work and I have to be a mom. And yes, we have a nanny, which is amazing. Couldn't do without her, but I just... Yeah, I just don't have any tips, except it's really hard.
Beware.
Oh, my God.
Love it. So where do you see things going, Natalie? What's next for you here?
I mean, there's the dream, and then there's the dream is that we can change the way people see flowers and that flowers become something that, you know, is more prolific, like that we gift them more, that we all have them in our house more, because I really think it changes the mood. There have been a couple studies. One was that like they sent flowers to people in post-op situations and they saw that people who had flowers in their hospital rooms had less need for pain medication, had faster recovery times, and reported more feelings of well-being in the hospital if they had flowers in their room. So I think that there actually is some scientific stuff going on with having flowers in your space that is healing and beneficial for your mental health. And I'd like to see people having them more in their house. I'd like to see people understanding that making flower art is an art. It's a skill. It's a beautiful service. And I want to see it be part of the culture that people understand like where their flowers come from, just like buying food, like
and being socially responsible about it.
Yeah. It's very interesting. Like there's some stuff we can't get away from because people want perfection and they want long vase lives and they want it to be cheap. When you want those three things, you are looking at outsourcing from South America. You are looking at outsourcing from Holland because they have to be genetically bred and grown in a way that they're conducive to those three things: cheap, long lasting, and perfect. Whereas like a garden flower grown here without pesticides might have an aphid on it. It might have a curled petal. It's not perfect. It might not last as long. And it's so interesting. But like, I have
that is
a lot
an interesting conflict right there, right?
It really
because obviously
is.
A consumer, I mean, you're buying something, you want it to last. And of course, yes. You want it to be perfect and all that, right? I mean, if I bought a new car, I want all those things.
Totally.
But it's nature.
100%.
Right? You and I aren't perfect, right?
Yes,
so, but, you know, we're beautiful at the end of the day, right?
It's so crazy. Like a rose, a garden rose has crazy thorns. Its branches are weaving. It only lasts a few days. It's soft. It's fragrant. It can't be packaged. The roses that we're getting now from Ecuador are straight stems. They're tight buds because they can be packaged into boxes of 24 and shipped 4 boxes to a case. And they can go on an airplane and last without water for 4 days. And then they can go from Miami to LA to San Diego, come into a florist shop and still last a week. But you're going to lose out on fragrance and you're going to lose out on those delicate, you know, whatever.
See, I thought it was me. Hang on. I can't smell this thing.
No, flowers don't smell like.
Turns out that that flower from Ecuador lasted smell like a long time ago, a couple thousand miles ago.
100% scientifically.
Wow. I thought it was something fragrance. Wrong with me, Natalie.
No. Fragrance.
I feel
like,
better now.
Oh, yeah. No, you're good. You're good. If a flower has fragrance, it means it's dying faster. I forget what it is, but it's something about like the hormone a flower gives off that is the fragrance. And I don't even know if it's a hormone. Please fact check the science here. But I do know that if a flower is fragrant, it actually correlates to a shorter vase life. The more fragrant it is, the less it's going to last in vase. So they've bred out fragrance in order to be longer lasting.
Oh, interesting.
Anyway, so that's pretty crazy. But if anybody's interested in learning more about the flower industry, we do book club at our work and we take turns reading books about business. Some of them are about management, some of them about management. And we just read a book called Flower Confidential by Amy Stewart. And it's a little older now, but it's about the flower industry. And she starts off with talking about how flowers are grown and bred. And then she goes to flower farms in South America. She goes to a flower farm here in California. And then she talks about flowers and then the history of it all the way back. It's really, really, really interesting. And she talks about that. That's where I learned a lot of that. And then she goes into talking about the retail flowers and like the San Francisco flower market and just like the state of the industry. But if anyone's interested, it's a really fascinating read.
So this book club that you have, I mean, you guys all get together once a month physically to chit chat about a book. Is it?
Yeah. Once a week we read Mastering the Rockefeller Habits, which was really interesting, which has helped us set up some specific meeting routines with our departments. It helped us like learn how to make goals that we follow up on because none of us went to business school and we can't afford somebody who went to business school. So we're doing business book club and the head of every department in my company, we read a chapter of a business book every week. And so, yeah, this Flower Confidential is our first flower related book. And then I think the next one we're going on to is Crucial Conversations about how to have hard conversations with people. So that's.
So the continuing evolution and continued education, right?
Yeah.
Collectively as an organization.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's
good
really
stuff.
Yeah.
Got to be doing that, right? Can't just assume that we got it all figured out now.
Yeah. And it's just a lot cheaper than going to a conference or hiring an expert.
Self-taught. Love yeah. It. Well, believe it or not, we got to put a little bow on this thing.
Wow.
Flower around the.
Thanks
the
for bearing again. With me with my long-winded answers.
No, I love it. I just love what, you know, the whole story here. So I always like to leave with the big idea. What's the big idea you want people to walk away with? Out of all the lessons learned, things talked about today, what is like your big thought? If I was to remember one thing from Natalie, what would it be?
That the world can be a hard place and that everybody is going through something and a small gesture of kindness and lightness and happiness can mean so much to people. And just you're never, ever, ever going to regret being kind in any situation and being giving in any situation. And sometimes when you can't say anything, flowers can do it for you.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Be kind.
Yep.
I love that. Jackie Reed, I think that's what she said as well. Be kind. Well, Natalie, oh, I appreciate you coming in. Super busy, obviously, but love to hear your story. And you're just a great example of what it looks like to be an entrepreneur that's purpose-driven. You know, it's like I had a passion for something. I've continued to evolve personally to turn this into a real business. Now you got a whole crew of people working for you. You have an impact on San Diego, from the big flower arrangement at the San Diego Art Museum to all the other work that you're doing. So thank you very much. Aww. We appreciate you.
Thanks.
So that's our show for today. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, and most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, Business for Good, and Cause San Diego. We're all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Lanton from Jailbreak Leadership saying, until next time, go do what you do. Go do what you do best, where we're all counting on you.